South Dakota, the Honorable Chief Justice Stephen R. Jensen presiding, is now in session.
You may be seated. Thank you. The case before the court is State of South Dakota versus Max Bolden, 30146. And we have Christy Jones appearing for Mr. Bolden. Ms. Jones, I understand you're appearing remotely. Can you hear me okay?
Yes, Your Honor, I can hear you.
Okay. And then we have Aaron Hanke, who's appearing on behalf of the state. Ms. Jones is appearing. We had as we're all well aware, we had a winter storm yesterday in the southeast part of the state, so she's made arrangements to appear remotely this morning and will be making her argument in that fashion. I will, Ms. Jones, since you can't see the clock, I assume you probably have one there with you, but I'll give you a warning at about 2 minutes when your time gets to that point.
Okay, thank you, Your Honor.
And with that, then, you can proceed with your argument this morning.
Thank you, Mr. Chief Justice. May it please the court and counsel. There is a single issue before the court today: whether the evidence in the trial of Mr. Bolden was sufficient to sustain a conviction of murder in the first degree.
Ms. Jones?
Ms.
Jones,
yes,
can I just stop you for a minute? Is there any way to turn that up just a bit, Shirley?
Maximum volume would be great.
What's that? I don't.
Shirley, I think he was messing with that little staff for me.
Okay. Chad's listening. Chad, do you want to come up? I'm going to stop the time, Chief. Yeah, restart the time.
Okay, let's go here.
Stop the time.
Yeah. Is he in the building, Shirley?
Can we try that? Yeah, he is in the building.
Do you want to give that another test, Ms. Jones?
Yes, Judge. Can you hear me now?
About the same. Try again.
Okay. I can keep going on my argument or just fill the space, whatever is easiest.
I can hear her. I mean, everybody else here.
Can we move the speaker at all so it's closer to the justice?
It comes through the system.
Oh, okay.
All right. Yeah, I think we can all hear you, Ms. Jones. That's a little bit better. We'll just start you back at 15 minutes. Sorry for interrupting.
That's okay, Your Honor. May I proceed at this point?
Go ahead.
Okay, thank you. Your Honors, there's a single issue before the court today: whether the evidence at trial for Mr. Bolden was sufficient to sustain a conviction of murder in the first degree. Mr. Bolden submits to this court that it was not, and that it was error for the circuit court to not grant his renewed motion for judgment of acquittal. Your Honors, this case is fairly straightforward. In fact, many of the facts at trial were undisputed and uncontested. It is undisputed that in the early morning hours of October 26th of 2019, Benjamin Donahue III was shot in a parking lot in downtown Sioux Falls and died from his injuries. It is also undisputed that Max Bolden shot Mr. Donahue. The issue at trial resolved solely around whether or not this was a premeditated murder that was not legally justified. In looking at the facts of this case, excuse me, it is important to note the circumstances in which the parties entered the night of October 26th. In the weeks and months leading up to this encounter, Mr. Bolden and Mr. Donahue had several heated exchanges in which Mr. Donahue explicitly and repeatedly threatened Bolden with violence, with gun violence, and with pulling guns on him. That is uncontroverted. The state never put forth any evidence in order to dispute that. Not only did Mr. Bolden testify to that, but at trials, several lay witnesses testified around the same time period that Mr. Donahue had pulled guns on several people around town and was always known to be carrying a gun with him. These witnesses were also aware that Mr. Bolden was being threatened directly by Mr. Donahue. So it is uncontroverted that the reputation of Mr. Donahue in and around this time, in the weeks and months leading up to his death, was that he was going around Sioux Falls, pulling guns on people, threatening Mr. Bolden, and had previously pulled guns on Mr. Bolden in threatening manners. This was the atmosphere in which Mr. Bolden entered the Halloween weekend in 2019. Mr. Bolden's intent, as he testified, was to lay low that weekend. He spent ample time with his family doing Halloween activities until the night of October 25th. He had indicated in testimony that his plan was to stay home that night, specifically not going out in Sioux Falls so that he did not run into Mr. Donahue. The threats had amped up, and he was trying to lay low to allow some time to pass to see if Mr. Donahue would just calm down a little. He did end up going to Mitchell to meet a friend. They stayed there for a little bit and then came back to Sioux Falls. Upon coming back to Sioux Falls, Mr. Bolden received a call to come down to Club David's because some friends were involved in an altercation. He initially ignored that call and said, I don't want to go down. However, he got another call that one of his friends was being held at gunpoint down there. He thought that he could help dissipate the situation, so he did go down to Club David's. And he took his girlfriend at the time, Krista Kreppenberg, and Miss Ajik went down with him down to Club David's. Mr. Bolden walked across the street, parked in the parking lot across Club David's, and walked across the street, where he talked to some of his friends and found out that the altercation that had been happening inside Club David's had dissipated and that there was nobody left to talk to. Bolden decided at that point that he wanted to go home. So he walked back across the street towards the parking lot where he was parked and where Kreckenberg and Ajik were waiting for him. As he was approaching the parking lot, Donahue suddenly popped out from behind a car and came within inches of Bolden, face to face. Instantly, Mr. Bolden testified that he was terrified. He indicated that Mr. Donahue had a reputation, that he's a big guy, and that he had been acting dangerous with guns for a long time. And he was having a quote-unquote beef specifically with Mr. Bolden. Despite his efforts to avoid the situation, Bolden, a very short man at 5'7", found himself directly in front of a 6'4" man that had been threatening to kill him and who was always known to have a gun. At that moment, they came face to face, and Mr. Bolden testified that he saw Donahue reach into the front of his pocket as if he was holding a gun, and at one point he saw Mr. Donahue reach the gun out of his pocket as though he was pulling the gun. At that point, Bolden testified that he drew a gun that was in his back pocket. He closed his eyes, jumped back, and shot. After the first shot, Mr. Bolden testified he was not even sure whether or not he had hit Mr. Donahue. His eyes were closed. He was not sure if the shot had even hit him. Donahue fell to the ground, but Bolden looked and saw that there was a gun next to Donahue's hand. He then walked around to try to get that gun away and indicated that Mr. Donahue jumped or flinched as he was going to get the gun. And again, as a reaction and in fear of the threat that was coming at him, Mr. Bolden shot a second shot. He knew for sure at that point he had hit Mr. Donahue and he left the scene. The only issue at trial is whether or not this was a first-degree premeditated murder and whether or not Mr. Bolden was justified in using threat or deadly force to confront this threat that was coming at him. The operative statute in this case is SDCL 2218.4.1. This is the self-defense statute. This statute indicates that a person is justified in using or threatening to use deadly force if the person reasonably believes that using or threatening to use that force is necessary to prevent imminent death or bodily harm. There are two things that this statute requires. One, the person is not engaged in criminal activity, and two, the person has a right to be in the spot that he's in. In this case, the state did not establish by proof beyond a reasonable doubt that Bolden didn't act in self-defense. The statute relies on what a reasonable person at the time would have believed and does not require retreat until the threat has been dissipated. In this case, it's undisputed by the state that Mr. Donahue made repeated and explicit threats to Mr. Bolden leading up to this night. It is undisputed that numerous people were threatened by Mr. Donahue with a gun all over Sioux Falls. Mr. Bolden testified, and the testimony at trial was not refuted, that he was terrified of Mr. Donahue because of the threats. So at this point, Judge, Your Honors, I would like to look at jury instructions that were given to the jury at trial. What the jury has to determine is whether or not a reasonable person in the same exact situation, seeing what the defendant sees and knowing what the defendant knows, would then believe force to be necessary. And I would submit to this court that given what Mr. Bolden knew at the time, the threats that he had received, the confrontation that he did not instigate, and the very quick nature with which this altercation happened, that it was reasonable for him in this situation to think that he needed to use lethal force in order to neutralize the attack that was coming at him. Accordingly, would submit to this court that it was error for the trial court not to grant motion for judgment of acquittal after the renewed motion and Mr. Bolden had put on his self-defense case.
Counsel, I have Justice Kern here. I have a couple of fact-based questions regarding the record. First, Kruckenberg did not testify. Was she subpoenaed by either party?
Correct, Your Honor. She did not testify. I believe she may have been subpoenaed, but was eventually released. But, Your Honor, I'd have to check the record. I remember that there was conversation about whether or not she was going to become, my recollection is she was subpoenaed, but was eventually released from that subpoena.
And then the second question involves the witness, Savannah Hernandez. She testified regarding the existence of a Snapchat video posted by a friend in which she testified that she was viewing people around the body of the decedent jumping over the body. Is that in the record? Or is that confined to her testimony?
Your Honor, it's confined. My apologies. It's confined to her testimony. The Snapchat, in the testimony she gave, she indicated the Snapchat video was something that she had seen that night. It did not get saved. It was on a third person's storyline it wasn't on her storyline. It wasn't saved in her Snapchat. And Snapchat, the nature of Snapchat is it doesn't get saved on her phone. So she did not have it. It was just testimony about what she had seen and how she knew Mr. Donahue had been killed.
Thank you.
Yes, Your Honor. Your Honor, really the crux of this case is the state has the burden to prove by proof beyond a reasonable doubt that Mr. Bolden did not act in self-defense. Really no evidence by the state was introduced at trial to contradict what Mr. Bolden had said. Mr. Bolden believed that Mr. Donahue was going to kill him. He testified to that repeatedly. Many lay witnesses testified to, that makes sense because of how he had been acting, that Mr. Donahue for weeks prior had been reckless with guns and specifically towards Bolden. When confronted in the streets in the early morning hours of October 26th by a man absolutely hell-bent on revenge and armed with a deadly weapon, it was reasonable for Bolden to believe that his only option to prevent his own imminent death was the use of a deadly weapon himself. There was no conflicting testimony about the origin of the altercation. Multiple witnesses testified that Donahue regularly carried a gun, made several threats two people with his gun and had numerous times threatened Bolden. In fact, Your Honors, in the days leading up to October 26th, Donahue had made multiple posts in his Facebook account threatening people specifically with gun violence. This is all stuff that was known to Mr. Bolden on the night of October, on the early morning hours of October 26th. Accordingly, it was error for the trial court to deny this renewed motion for a judgment of acquittal, and we would ask this court to find the same and to reverse and remand this case for further proceeding. If there are no other questions at this time, I will reserve the rest of the time for rebuttal.
Thank you, Ms. Jones. Ms. Hanke, you can proceed with your argument.
May it please the court, counsel, there is no question who killed Benjamin Donahue III. Bolden has admitted to shooting him twice in the head. His argument is the state did not prove its case, in particular, did not prove he wasn't acting in self-defense. This court treats appeals on a denial of a judgment of acquittal the same as a sufficiency of the evidence claim. So it looks at whether the evidence, if believed by the jury, was sufficient to support a guilty verdict. This court will not resolve conflicts of evidence, weigh the credibility of witnesses, or reevaluate the evidence on appeal. But that is exactly what Bolden is asking this court to do, to reevaluate the evidence. The jury sat through 4 days of evidence, including 23 witnesses, 35 exhibits, and after all of this, the jurors were asked to sort through all of the information and determine what happened that night. And the jury determined Bolden was guilty of first-degree murder. Just a couple of points I wanted to address that Ms. Jones made. She stated that there was no evidence that contradicted Bolden's versions of the events that night. But I disagree with that. Donisha Williams testified. She was kind of behind Bolden as he was walking across the street. She testified she heard Donahue make a comment to Bolden as they were approaching about, let's quash this beef. Also, testimony presented after Bolden shot Donahue the first time in the face, there was evidence that he was laying on the ground, unresponsive, and blood was pouring from his head. So for Donahue to say, for Bolden to say, I didn't know I shot him. I closed my eyes, I pointed the gun, I didn't know I shot him. He was laying on the ground with blood pouring out of his face. In addition, Bolden was the only person that night to have testified seeing Donahue with a gun. There was no gun found on Donahue after the fact. No other witnesses at that scene testified to seeing Donahue physically have a gun that night. I know Bolden testified he pulled the gun out of his pants, and before the second shot was fired, he had kind of bent down to reach over to grab that gun from Donahue. Again, there was no gun found on Donahue or any evidence that a gun even was there that night.
Williams was the only other witness who actually observed the shooting.
I would say yes and no, Your Honor. Yes, but also Ajik testified, and I don't believe she actually witnessed the shooting. She heard the commotion. I believe she saw the gunshot and then witnessed Donahue on the ground. So to see the actual gunfire, Ajik, I do not believe, witnessed that, but she did see the aftermath, so to speak, Your Honor.
And did both, I know Williams affirmatively testified that she didn't see a gun on.
Correct.
The other witness, what did she say?
I don't remember if she explicitly said she did not see a gun on Donahue, but there's no evidence put forth that she did see a gun on Donahue that night.
And were there any other witnesses that talked about being around or seeing or going to around Bolden's body before law enforcement arrived?
I believe those were the two main witnesses, Your Honor.
No other witnesses?
Not to my recollection. I would have to double check the record on that. But then again, the credibility of witnesses and who we're going to believe, that's a question for the jury to determine. And so when looking at the judgment of acquittal, we have to view it in light most favorable to the state. And again, that's a question for the jury to determine. Who are we going to believe? Are we going to believe Bolden's version of events, or are we going to believe Donisha Williams' version of events that night? Another point that Ms. Jones made that I wanted to touch on was that the jury was instructed. And I believe she was referencing jury instruction number 30. She can correct me if I'm wrong, but it discusses lawful self-defense and what a reasonable person in that situation would be. And here, Bolden shot Donahue first time in the face. At that point, Donahue goes to the ground. He's laying unconscious on the ground. And so for him to fire the second shot, I would argue that there is no more danger of attack. Donahue is laying unconscious on the ground. Whether or not he had a gun, again, is a question of fact for the jury to determine. But at that point, there is no more threat. He is unconscious. How can he injure Bolden? So that second shot certainly would not be a self-defense claim at all.
Was there evidence presented to the jury as to which shot was the fatal shot? Or was there a determination in that regard?
The coroner did testify, and if I recall the coroner's testimony correctly, Justice Devaney, Dr. Snell stated that that first shot, had Mr. Donahue received immediate medical attention, he may have been able to survive. He wasn't able to give like a definitive, if EMTs would have arrived in 5 minutes, he could have survived that shot. He did testify definitively, though, that there would be no survival of that second shot, that that would have basically been an instant death situation in that. So I don't believe he could determine first shot 100% would have been fatal, but certainly that second shot was.
And how was he able to determine which was the first and which was the second wound?
I believe from the angles, the first shot was to the face, and the second shot was at a closer point-blank range. I believe he testified was within 12 inches. Given Bolden and Donahue's height difference, I don't know that the 12-inch, given the height difference between Bolden and Donahue and a lot of physics, quite honestly, Your Honor, that is above my knowledge.
I mean, the question isn't, it's just what was presented in front of the jury in that regard.
Oh, in terms of Dr. Snell's testimony?
Right.
Okay. I believe, Your Honor, he did have some evidence, or was presented some information about, like, the situation in terms of, like, Bolden and Donahue and their height difference, and he was able to determine it that way.
Well, counsel, didn't he testify that the first shot was above the lip, right below the nose, and that this was a point-blank contact with the face?
Yes, Your Honor.
Your earlier argument or point about the second shot being in and of itself sufficient, perhaps, if I heard you correctly, to sustain the conviction. I mean, I understand the argument, but that just highlights, in my mind at least, that Mr. Bolden had to prevail in two instances, the first one and the second one. Because if he won on the first one, or would have won on the first one, or wins on appeal on the first one, he has to also demonstrate that his pursuit would have been reasonable under instruction 26. So he doesn't have to just, he can not only stand his ground, right? It's 26.
Mm-hmm.
He can also pursue the aggressor until the threat's neutralized, if that's a reasonable course of action. And the jury was instructed that on
mm-hmm.
that point. The jury was instructed also that even if it would have been more reasonable for him, or even if it would have been a reasonable course also to withdraw, he didn't have to, as long as it would have also been reasonable for him to pursue to neutralize the threat. So not only can he stand his ground, he can pursue. And our cases say that. The instruction said that, so the jury had all of that. We have a general verdict form.
Correct.
There's no specific interrogatories, just guilty.
That is correct, Your Honor. And I would, to your point, and maybe this is the point you were making, Justice Salter, the jury wasn't asked to view each gunshot wound individually. It was a collective. There of times I think we see this in, like, assault cases or rape cases where there are multiple instances that could be that one count of assault or rape. Here we don't have that. It is simply the question, did Bolden kill Donahue in essence? Correct. So whether it was one shot or 10 shots, it's looked at as a collective.
Of course.
And I don't think the jury is asked to distinguish shot one versus shot two. Ultimately, this is a question. It is for the jury to decide whether the murder was justified. The jury had the opportunity to consider all of the evidence, including conflicting witness testimony, to weigh the credibility of the witnesses, and to make a determination as to whether Bolden was acting reasonably with his self-defense. In viewing the evidence in light most favorable to the verdict, the evidence supports the jury's determination that Bolden was not acting in self-defense and committed first-degree murder when he shot Donahue. There is nothing to suggest that the evidence presented was so deficient that a rational trier of fact could not have found the essential elements beyond a reasonable doubt. And for that, the state would ask this court to affirm Bolden's convictions. Thank you.
Thank you. Ms. Jones, you may proceed with your rebuttal argument.
Thank you, Your Honor. Justice Kern, to answer a question you had previously asked me, to confirm, Krista Kreckenberg was served with subpoena to testify at trial, but was not ultimately called by the state. But the state did serve her with subpoena to testify. I'm not sure why the state ultimately chose not to call her. Your Honors, I think one thing that Ms. Hankey just indicated is a pretty crucial point about whether or not Mr. Donahue had a gun. There was ample testimony in the record that Mr. Donahue always had a gun. Mr. Bolden would have known Mr. Donahue always had a gun. There was testimony that it's likely that somebody after Mr. Donahue was shot, somebody probably came back and picked up the gun before the police officers arrived. And I think what's even more important to note is in sentencing, Judge Hellman indicated even the jury believed that Donahue had a gun. So I think that is important. When defending against a threat that's coming at you, we have to put ourselves in a reasonable person's mind, knowing what they know, seeing what they see, to be able to determine whether or not self-defense is legally justified. In this case, we have Donahue, who is coming at him with a gun. And as Ms. Hankey indicated, whether or not it's one shot or 10 shots, the threat is still happening. I wish it was as clear-cut as she indicated, that Ms. Williams' testimony indicated, that there was ample time to decide what had happened, that, you know, we had time to look at Mr. Donahue on the ground to make sure that he had actually been shot, to make sure the threat had been neutralized. In reality, Your Honors, and clearly demonstrated at trial, this happened within a matter of seconds. It took seconds for shot one and shot two to happen. So was there time to look and to see whether or not he had actually been shot, whether or not the threat had been neutralized? Mr. Bolden testified he was not even sure if he shot him for the first time. He's standing in a different position than Darnisha Williams was. So, Your Honors, in looking at the evidence that was presented in this case, and again, I would say when it's the state's burden to prove self-defense did not happen, the evidence presented by Mr. Bolden was uncontradicted. Your Honors, in looking at this case law for self-defense cases, this case is very different than several of the cases this court has dealt with. Several of the cases deal with an altercation where somebody is returning to the scene after the threat had happened. So where there's a retreat and then a return. That never happened here. Shot one and shot two happened immediately after Mr. Donahue came at Mr. Bolden and Mr. Bolden said he drew a gun. This is a very quick time period. There was no retreat. And as Justice Ulter, you pointed out, even if there was a slight retreat, he's not legally required to do that. There's a threat coming at him. He has the legal right under South Dakota law to stand there and to defend himself until he knows reasonably, based on everything he sees and everything he knows, that the threat has been neutralized. That did not happen here. At the time that he shot, one shot, two shots, whatever, where it's a collective, quick sequence of events, the threat was coming at him, and he had the legal right to stand his ground. And for the circuit court not to grant the motion for judgment of acquittal was an error based on the uncontroverted evidence, because the state did not overcome their great burden of proof beyond a reasonable doubt to prove that this was not self-defense.
Well, counsel, do you understand Ajik and Williams to have testified that after the first shot, they saw Bolden lying unconscious on the ground, not moving, and then Bolden delivered the second shot? So there's two eyewitnesses standing there who testified to that. And then the video, which shows some of the positioning, it's blocked in part by a car. So wasn't the jury entitled to consider all of that?
Correct, Your Honor. I will indicate the only one from testimony that said that she saw Mr. Donahue lying on the ground was Ernisha Williams. I think AJ testified that after the altercation was over, after both shots, that she then saw him lying, but that she maybe wasn't close enough to see what had happened between shot one or shot two. So I think that was Darnisha Williams. And what I will indicate to the court, this is a matter of split seconds. So, you know, yes, you're correct. In the video, we cannot see Mr. Donahue. We do not know what position his body was in at the time. We do not know whether or not he was moving. We do not know, you know, what Bolden, Mr. Bolden, saw, other than what he indicated is that he saw him with a gun. He was worried that the threat was not over, so he was trying to neutralize the threat. Mr. Donahue's body jerked, and that he shot the second shot, that it was more of a reaction on the second shot, and that he shot that second shot. Ms. Williams was
Judge,
there.
Your time is up, but I'll just let you wrap up here.
Okay. Thank you, Judge. Much of this evidence was undisputed. There was really no debate or significant fight over the evidence at trial. And simply put, the state did not overcome their heavy burden to prove by proof beyond a reasonable doubt that he did not act in self-defense. So we would ask the court to reverse and remand. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you for your arguments this morning, counsel. The case is submitted.